The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning as we take you up until 11 o'clock. And we take your calls at 617-779-0985 here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this morning. We got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers with us for the next hour, and then they'll head off his morning skate over at the Garden this morning. Bruins getting ready for their home opener. 3-1 on a Western swing to open the season. Good to see you guys back, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to go. And not a bad little trip they put together, huh? But about an inch away from being 4-0 right now.
No, well, yeah. An offsides away or a goalie interference away from being maybe 4-0, right? So, no, it was a good trip. 2-2, I think, would have been acceptable. But you come back, you're 3-0 to start and a chance to go 4-0. And they didn't play poorly that game. They made a couple of mistakes and they got a couple unlucky bounces there in that fourth game. So, hey, 3-1 coming home, I'll take it.
Philip Grubauer was also – he was terrific in that final game. The Bruins peppered him with some great opportunities, some great A looks. So, I mean, to walk back home after that trip out west, playing in those buildings in Dallas, even Arizona, where they a lot of people think, hey, this could be maybe a surprise team out in the Western Conference.
They missed the playoffs by 4 points last year.
Yeah.
And they came on strong. You had, you know, obviously Vegas is a tough place to play in Colorado. So they're in a good spot.
Yeah, you had two home openers. Right? You know, I mean, a lot of people picking Dallas to do some things in the West. A lot of people picking Colorado. Vegas is certainly a favorite. So, yeah, you had – that was a tough trip. That was going to be a tough trip. And the Bruins didn't play great in the first couple of games, I didn't think. I thought they got great goaltending. You know, they were still trying to find their game. They were good in Vegas. They got down 2-0, and then they took over that game. That third period was pretty impressive with the lead until that penalty, and then Vegas scored on the power play. But, you know, I thought that third period was real good. And actually, as the game went on, it was real good for them, you know, against a good team.
Well, that's kind of going to open up and ask you guys. It's like over the course of the four games, look, there was so much talked about, you know, what's this team going, how is this team going to respond the way last year ended and all of this stuff. And, to come out and open up with a tough road trip and open up with with three straight wins in, as you said, some pretty tough barns to play in. It shows kind of that response right away that you could tell that they wanted to get off to a good start and that it was important to this team to get off to a good start and put that behind them.
Yeah, I mean, the team itself got better as this trip went on. The goaltenders were ready right from the start.
Yep.
You know, and they had to be. You know, I think, you know, you played pretty well against Dallas at times, and then the third period, Dallas kind of pushed a bit. Same with Arizona. It was 1-0 game. I thought Arizona had some real good opportunities. Halak was very good. You know, 1-0 game. Mm-hmm. He didn't score a whole lot. And then I thought that against Vegas that's the top line and the rest of the team kind of came along. You know, Krejci missed the first game. He's been better and better as the trip went on. Bergeron's line was real good as the trip went on. Better as the trip went on, I should say. And like I said, the goaltenders were there for the entire road trip. So, hey, it was – you start 3-1 on that trip, I'll take it. Come back home. Now you got to do your work at home. You know, you're playing against a team today in New Jersey that hasn't won yet. And a team that made a lot of massive changes this offseason, and the expectations are pretty high for them, and they have not won a game yet. So they're going to be hungry coming in here today. So, and then, you know, the way the trip went, not to belabor it, like travel was a little difficult getting home. You know, the team didn't get home till, I mean, I didn't walk in my door till 7 o'clock yesterday morning, and I live right next to the airport. So, you know, travel was challenging. So, you know, they got a quick turnaround and get ready for today. It's not going to be easy, but the home opener, I would hope that they're ready to go.
When we talked to the coaches during the trip, one of the things that Bruce Cassidy told us was, in some ways, you come home after basically a red-eye flight. You're going to play the Devils today, and then you got a Monday afternoon game against the Anaheim Ducks. It's almost an extension of the road trip until you get your feet under you once you're past that game on Columbus Day.
Yeah, and then you got Tampa Bay staring at you in the face right
after
that, too. But you get a couple of days off, you know, but it's, you know, not like they have a soft landing coming off of that either, which...
Nobody's feeling sorry for you. Yeah. You know, it's a quick turnaround, and, you know, it's hey, that's the challenges of a season. So, you know, you're right into it right away.
But everybody has different challenges. You know, I was looking at the Rangers had a week off in between games for no particular reason. You know, they played their first two games and then had 6 days off before they play again today. So, you know, it's like different teams go through different challenges. Like, you know, opening up the season with a four-game Western trip, there's some positives and some negatives to be taken out of that,
well,
right?
There's positives because they went 3-1. If
yeah.
you went 0-4, then there's no
yeah, this would be a very different conversation to start.
A whole lot when you're going 0-4, so...
I think the Bruins are actually one of only three teams in the league that has not had a home opener yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and to start out on that swing with the time changes, everything, and as Bob alluded to, you got to be a pro. This is reality in the National Hockey League. But mission accomplished thus far, winning 3 of 4.
Just overall, what's kind of stood out to you to this point as far as the Bruins themselves? You know, who's anybody?
Well, positives or negatives?
Well, let's start with positives. I did a lot of negative last hour, so let's do some positives. Not on the Bruins, but let's talk some positives.
Well, goaltending.
Yeah.
You know, they were ready to go. I mean, Rask was very good against Dallas. Halak shut out against Arizona. Rask was good again against a really potent Vegas team. And when the Bruins weren't quite there coverage-wise early on, there was a couple goals scored. But as the game went on, he was good. And then I thought Halak was real good against Colorado. I mean, he didn't have much chance on any of those goals, I don't think. So there was some bad breakdowns on those goals. So so goaltending for me stood out as number one. And then I just thought the team itself, like I said, it got better as it went along. You know, the Bergeron line that you come to expect so much of was better as the trip went on. You know, you saw the last two games where they were able to put up some numbers. I know, you know, Marchand had the turnover against Colorado, but they were good against, you know, they had some really good opportunities. 2 2-on-1s with Pastrnak having the puck in his hands, and he made passes on both of them, and they were both good passes, and Grubauer just made the save on them. But... so that line was better. I thought Krejci got better, like I said, as the thing went on. But yeah, you want goaltending, team defense. That's got to be your structure, and then you look for the scoring. I thought the penalty killing struggled a bit. You know, it allowed some goals against two goals against Vegas, and at least one against Colorado.
The first one,
yeah, one, at least one against Colorado. So, you know, penalty killing, you know, maybe get back to work on that a little bit. The power play looked a little bit more comfortable as they went along, but still not quite there yet.
That was the power play goal against Colorado. That was a big swing in that game because they're up 2-0 late in the first period. They take a too many men penalty, and then they give up the power play goal, and it's like it's a totally different game if that's 2-0
that
going into the first,
too.
First intermission.
You know, Danton Heinen played pretty well on the trip. He can't play the puck there. He hopped on the ice. Marchand's going off the ice. You know that. You cannot play the puck when you come on the ice until the man you're substituting for is off the ice. I mean, that was an easy call for them. So, that was a mistake. And then there was a breakdown on the PK as well, off the rush, that allowed Landeskog maybe. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Landeskog going down the left-wing side. He had a clear path right to the net. So
okay. We went through positives. Negatives?
Penalty kill.
Penalty kill. That's kind of the one that stands out so far, right?
And you know, there's still some holes. Every team's got holes, right? Every team's going to have some issues and things that they need to address. But you know, holes for me is who's playing right wing. Is Kuhlman the answer with Krejci? I like Kuhlman as a player. I really do. I think he adds a lot. I don't know if he's the right fit for David Krejci. And then, who's the right fit for Charlie Coyle? So, you know, is it Richie? Is it Backus?
The same question.
I wonder if we'd be having this conversation if Coleman's goal had counted.
Right.
I mean, the coaching staff told us.
I still think it should have, but.
I agree.
I like what Bruce Cassidy said. I heard his comments after the game, and he said, you know, we were told that it has to be egregious in order to take it off the board.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was egregious.
No.
I mean, I'm right with him.
It didn't meet the standard. But I think here in the early going, and the coaching staff told us they're talking about it, that they're still trying to find the right fit and trying to establish the right chemistry on lines 2 and 3. Jake DeBrus told us in the intermission in Colorado, he said, you know, listen, we're still searching for it. We didn't really have a chance to play together a lot in the exhibition season. And I think one of the conversations heading into the start of the season was, did everybody play enough to be ready at the start? Now, the Bruins are 3-1. But that said, it's going to take some time and some repetitions for those combinations to figure it out and for Bruce Cassidy to figure out who goes where.
He's a guy that had a couple good opportunities in that game, and he scored. That was the offsides call, and it was the right call. But unfortunately, you know, for him, that was a nice goal. That was a good setup. That was on the power play in the third period. It was offsides, but he also had a chance on a 2-on-1 that Grubauer stopped him on. That was off pass from Pastrnak.
Well, now that it comes to mind, one of the things that we've talked about here in the early going, Jake DeBrus in front of the net on the power play, if he can be even more effective, and he looks, at least in a small sample size, more effective out in front. That's something that he's worked on. If he can add that to his game with the amount of weapons that he has around him, he could be poised for a really good year.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
.5 The Sports Hub, the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. All right, let's talk a little bit about the NHL's review system, the challenge system. Colorado challenges a couple of goals the other night. They both get overturned. Bob, you already kind of mentioned in passing, you felt like the Kuhlman goal should have stood up. The DeBrus goal that gets taken away 50 seconds after there's a, you know, an offside by a hair. I
had no problem with that one.
I think ultimately, you know, they're both probably the right call, but
not the first one.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think the first one. Everything that we've been told and shown illustrated that call should not have been overturned.
We go to meetings in September, and there's a nice presentation done, and you know they talk about, you know, goalie interference, they talk about challenges. We have the officials talk to us, the hockey operations talk to us, and you know Gary Bettman talks to us, and it's you know they want more goals. It has to be egregious in order to bring it off the board. And I forgot about the word that they used, and that was the word they used. And Bruce Cassidy brought it up the other day, and I don't think that was quote unquote egregious enough to bring it off the board. There was a little bit there, you know. If you talk to Colorado people, oh yeah, that was absolutely goalie interference. You know, it just depends on who you talk to. I know I'm biased, but yep. I'm trying to look at it objectively. And here's a question I'm going to have for Bruce Cassidy today. We interview him for our pregame show, and my question to him today is going to be, if the exact situation was reversed, would you have challenged? I'm curious what his answer is. Because if you challenge, now the rule is if you challenge, so Jared Bednar challenges. Now, that was such a key juncture of the game. It's 2-1, the Bruins. They score that goal. Potentially 3-1. Jared Bednar challenges. If he loses the challenge, the Bruins go on the power play.
Right. That game could be over
now,
right then.
You get a delay a game penalty if you're unsuccessful. And then if you challenge again and you're unsuccessful, it's a double minor. So, you know, to challenge there, you need to be 100. You need to be sure. I thought it was a little risky because I thought the Bruins were going to go up 3-1 and go on the power play there, especially since they called it a goal on the ice.
Well, that was and that's always a big one is like, what was the call on the ice? They called that a goal. So there needs to be
that
clear, inconclusive
wide.
Evidence, right?
The shot was going wide. It hit off the defenseman and went in.
And Grubauer didn't move. Yes, there was contact, but he had the opportunity to reset and play his position. And David Krejci at that point was out of the blue paint. He didn't move.
I think it's always kind of telling, too, when you go back and watch that afterwards. Grubauer makes kind of a little arm motion toward the official, but he didn't protest that much.
And he initiated some of the contact with Krejci as well.
Yeah.
With his glove hand. So, hey, whatever. I mean, I have my opinion. They have theirs. Don't agree, but whatever. I mean, it was such a key point of the game. But I am curious as to what Bruce Cassidy will say when I ask him, you know, would you have challenged that? Because you have the potential going down 3-1 and being shorthanded to start. That's a key point of that game.
The other one is offside. I mean, if you go back and look at it frame by frame by frame, I mean, it's offside by a hair. I think the bigger topic that comes out of that is, like, do they need to put some sort of a time limit on these things? Because 50 seconds after the entry...
The time limit is set. If the puck comes out of the zone, there's no more challenge. And I'm actually okay with it. I mean, I get it. I understand the frustration. If the puck comes out of the zone... Okay, it's done. We always say that looked offsides. Well, we'll never know unless the puck goes in.
Right?
So we'll never see a replay unless there's a goal.
And I'm not in favor of ditching the replay system. I think on the first one, when it comes to the goaltender interference, there has to be more uniformity. Someone has to better define what it is, because what we're being told and what we're being shown and what we're seeing called doesn't match up. But I think at this point, what I think you want, if you're a fan, a player, a coach, management, you have the technology to be able to make, hopefully, the best call possible. And with offside, it's usually in or out. That's usually not as subjective. Goaltender interference is.
Right. And look, I think consistency is more than anything else what everybody asks for, whether it's fans, coaches, you know, broadcasters, whatever, is we want to be able to look at it and have some reasonable degree of certainty of how the ruling is going to go. And when they get into these things, I never know. I just, you know, they show the replay.
I mean, was there contact? Yeah. Was it minimal? Yes, it was. Was it, you know, enough to overturn it? I didn't believe so. So, you know, there's ones where you see, well, that's easy call. That's goalie interference. I just, that one, because it was called a goal on the ice, if it was called no goal on the ice, maybe I could see it not being overturned.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think there was enough evidence there to say, oh, that, you know, absolutely goalie interference.
So, Judd, I would love it if they just did away with replays entirely at this point.
I think you want to get it right, especially with some of the stuff that they've installed this year. If the puck leaves the surface and hits the protective netting, or if a play should have been stopped because a puck was high-sticked, or if a guy throws a hand pass out in front of the net that triggers an overtime goal and decides a game in the playoffs. I think that you have the technology to be able to get it right. But I think that the execution has to be better.
617-779-0985. Let's go to Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Good.
It's really hard to find a whole ton of fault with how the Bruins started the season. The one thing that I still keep harping on is the fact that we're still doing this, you know, revolving door of players for David Krejci. I just really, really wish we could just get that settled once and for all, so we can get, you know, the team can get David Krejci going and playing in a manner to which he's capable of playing. The question I have for you guys is, you talked about, you know, the meetings that you have with regard to rule changes and such, and, you know, the goaltender interference calls drive me crazy. That is just, you know, one of the most frustrating reviews, I think, out of all of them. And you gentlemen indicated that, you know, you were instructed that they would need to be egregious, which that call on Krejci was not egregious. Is that same communication being made to the NHL officials? Because I just can't see how you could have called that blatant goalie interference. That's all I have for today, guys, and have a beautiful day.
All right, thanks, Maria.
The answer to that question is yes. And that actually came from the commissioner, because if I remember specifically, he had to come out after a lot of the goaltender interference was instituted to basically emphasize to the officials, you don't make a change unless it is egregious. And, you know, again, I can guarantee you that later this year on this hockey show, we are going to be talking about goaltender interference in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah. It comes up all the time.
But in answer to Maria's question, yes, that was re-emphasized by the commissioner of the National Hockey League. So I guarantee it should have gotten to Stephen Walkham and his officials.
But, you guys are talking about how, you know, like Bruce Cassidy, you know, getting to answer the question, like, would you have challenged? I mean, as we talked about, that's a big moment in that game. That's a big decision to make. It's tougher on the coaches because they don't have a handle on how this is going to go either. I mean, that's what makes the decision to challenge it that much more risky is, even if it is, you know, what some might consider egregious, like that's kind of a broad term. You don't really know, as I said, how the decision's ultimately going to get made. And so if you're a coach, to challenge in that is even riskier than it might be otherwise.
Let's take it a step further. So I remember during the exhibition season, this came up with the Montreal Canadiens, and I wish we would talk a little bit more about the team and less about this. But
yes.
Claude Julien challenged, got it wrong, and now this year there's a penalty assessed. It's not that a timeout is taken. And this is, again, a very subjective call. And Julien said, they are trying to tell you with the change that they're trying to dissuade you from challenging these calls. But you have no choice. If you have Carey Price, I have to show that I have his back. If he thinks that this could be goaltender interference, I have to make that call. And if I don't, and if I get it wrong, I'm in trouble. So I think that the way that they're legislating this and the way that they're looking at this, I think that they need to reevaluate it. And every year since this has been instituted, someone around the National Hockey League, whether it's Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, or another coach or a goaltender, everyone will ask, what is goaltender interference? In the same way that we have talked, what is a catch
right
in the National Football League? The National Hockey League has to do a better job of defining it.
Shoots and rounds, flashed off the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered, fired, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. And your phone call, 617-779-0985. Going back to something that you said, Bob, and something that Maria kind of brought up as well, that Kuhlman, his spot right now, early on in the season, I think we all like him. I think he's he definitely has a spot on this team and is showing himself to be a pretty significant player. But you kind of said, not sure if that's the right spot for him next to David Krejci. What did you mean by that?
Scoring. You know, can he score enough? You've got a guy that's an elite playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can he complement that line enough? I mean, you know, if Jake DeBrus is getting 30 to 40 goals, is he the right fit? But, well, yeah, he's helping to create. You know what I mean? But it's only four games, so I'm not sure. I just, you know, and I know that they double shift Pasternak there once in a while, depending on, you know, if they're coming off of a penalty kill or something like that, they'll throw Pasternak out there. Maybe even if, I think against Vegas, they threw Pasternak out there a few extra times. But if they're doing that, that kind of tells you that, is he the right fit? Or, you know, begs the question, is he the right fit? I like Kuhlman as a player. I really do. I think he's a good player. I think there's a place for him absolutely on this team and a lot of teams. But alongside David Krejci, I don't know if that's the right fit.
I think we're going to see a lot of different configurations just based on, and obviously health is going to be a big factor
right now. Yeah. And I, Providence only played two games, so I'm not entirely sure because we obviously didn't see either game. I want to see where Anders Bjork is playing. I think he is a possibility, you mm-hmm. know, moving down the road as somebody that's going to play on his off wing. You know, because that right side is still a bit of a question mark. So if Bjork is playing right side down in Providence, I know they started 2-0. I know he had a goal. But I need to know where he's playing and how he's playing.
I also wonder at some point.
It should be, yeah. Sorry, Judge. It should be give him some time down there. I'm not saying rush him, get him up here right now. I'm saying give him some time down there, and down the road that might be your option.
And again, we're talking about a small sample size, whether it's for Bjork or for the Bruins at this point. So some of the stuff has to play out. Some of the stuff will work itself out based on health as well. But I also wonder when we're going to see Charlie Coyle move to the wing at some point and maybe see a little bit more of Par Lindholm in the middle.
He played well. Lindholm played well in his games. The games he was in there, no problem at all with his game. He's smart. He's not flashy, but he seems to me, from what we've seen in a very small sample size, whether it be preseason or the beginning of the year here, that he's a smart player and he's not going to hurt you. No matter where you put him. You know, do you put him at center and put Corrali on the wing? Do you move Coyle up and do you give Lindholm a little bit more time? It might be an option here moving forward, but if they're going to make that determination, do it, you know, early, so you allow Coyle to kind of. Coyle had an outstanding camp. He had a pretty good road trip. He was good in most of this. I didn't see him as much against Colorado. He wasn't as much of a factor, but he's been very, very good. And who's playing away with him? So there's still a hole there. And I thought Heinen was pretty good too. So that right side right now is a big question mark. Is Brett Ritchie the answer? Haven't seen enough. Is David Backes the answer? Right now you got Ritchie, Backes, and Kuhlman fighting for two spots if you keep Wagner on the fourth line.
I mean, it's you've got a bunch of guys that, are
Cassidy even mentioned maybe we'll see Wagner up there a little bit more. But we didn't see that last
right. I just you look up and down this roster, it's like you've got a bunch of guys who are guys who can contribute and but they're more suited for third and fourth line roles, right? You're one guy short on that top six, and that's been the case for a while with this team.
There's a couple of options, I think, down in Providence, right? But I think they need to play a little bit more. I know that, whether it be Bjork, because he's had the injuries in the past, whether it be, Senishin, I don't know how his start has been. We didn't see enough of him in camp. Mm-hmm. And what we saw was not good enough, to be honest with you. Hughes was hurt the entire camp. I'm just thinking of right shots right now. Bjork's a left shot, I understand that, but I'm talking about right wingers. Sure. So, and who might be an option coming up.
Well, the other nuance with a guy like Bjork, they played him a lot in the exhibition season on his strong side. Now, I haven't heard anything from Providence or Jay Leach where
they didn't
exactly
play last
Bjork
night
is playing. Is he playing his offside? Is he playing on a strong side? So that's something else to focus on. As he gathers his confidence down in the American Hockey League.
Right, and it also gives you a window in, if he is playing and is offside down in Providence, it gives you a window in what their thinking might be for his, kind of immediate future, right? If they send him to Providence and say, okay, we're going to play him, on his offside for 10 games, and then hopefully he'll be ready to come up and do that up here. I mean, that would be ideal for everyone involved. But again, this is kind of goes back to the same questions we've been going through with that Krejci line for a long time now. It feels like it's like who's going to eventually fill that spot, and the answer ends up being, well, it'll change a bunch as the season goes on. Krejci put up one of his best seasons of his career last year, and they were kind of plugging guys in and out as the season went on. So I thought ultimately last year what stuck with me with Krejci was he came out, I forget whether it was during camp or early in the season, and said, I got to take more responsibility for the fact that the guys around me aren't putting up better numbers or aren't performing. Like, that's got to be on me as a veteran.
According to line charts, I guess, for Providence, Bjork's playing the left side.
Okay.
Steen, Hughes, Oscar Steen, Cameron Hughes, Zach Senishin, are all playing the right side.
All right.
For a guy like David Krejci, a couple of things thinking back to last year that stand out. A, how consistent he was. B, how healthy he was. And three, how good he was when Bergeron was out of the lineup and he was elevated into that spot with Marchand and Pasternak.
Yeah, they fit right in there.
Shoe center, fire, score!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, taking you up until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and Bruins with their home opener tonight, and then Monday They host the Anaheim Ducks at the Garden as well for a 1 o'clock faceoff. And caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, which is 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see that game against Anaheim Monday at the Garden. Catch all the hard-hitting action tonight as the Bruins take on the New Jersey Devils on opening night. Puck drops at 7. Select tickets still available at Ticketmaster.com/Bruins. So again, caller number 10 right now at 617-931-0985. We'll get a pair of tickets for Monday's game against the Ducks. All right, we've talked a little bit about replay this morning. We've also talked a little bit about this Bruins four-game road trip to open up the season. They go 3-1 on the trip and get ready for New Jersey tonight. Kind of looking over those first four games as well, guys, we talked a little bit about Krejci's line and mentioned a little bit about Bergeron's line. How about defense so far? You know, goaltending was there, certainly. Both Halak and Rask have played very well over their first two starts. What's the team looking like defensively in front of them so far?
Not bad. I think that they're still kind of a work in progress a little bit there. If you break them down individually, probably would like a little bit more from, McAvoy, and even Carlos had a couple of coverage issues here to start the season, I think, but has done some good things as well. I thought Crew got a little bit better as the trip went on. I thought Grizzlick was real good at the beginning of the trip, real good, and then he took a, I didn't see it, but they said he took a shot off the foot, and that's why he missed part of the first period against Vegas, but then he came back and played after that and played the whole Colorado game. Early in the trip, though, his ability to get back for pucks and escape and make the good first pass was evident. It was real good, really strong. So, and Clifton unfortunately blows a tire there on the game-winning goal by, Barkovsky? Yeah, so against Colorado. But I thought he played pretty good. He's actually fun to watch. I mean, we found that out last year, but he is a lot of fun to watch. He hits you when you don't expect to get hit, and he, for a guy that's not that big, he hits hard. I think he surprises a lot of people. So, I like the way he's played. He's competed. So, it's been fine. Let's put it that way. Can it be a little bit better? Yeah, it can be. But, you look at different facets for them. Are they shutting down? Are they playing real well defensively? There was some coverage issues against Vegas. There's been a couple of coverage issues here and there. And they work in conjunction. It's team defense. Work in conjunction with the forwards as well. And then how quickly can they get the puck, move it out of the zone, get it into the hands of the forwards, moving up the ice. And like I said, it's coming. It's coming. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't where I think they expect it to be either.
And for a guy like Charlie McAvoy, I think what the Bruins would like to see is him control the tempo of the game, if he's able to do that, and add as an attack mentality. Let's keep the power play aside, but 5-on-5. He has only two shots through four games, playing just over 22 minutes of ice time.
Well,
there's more
that,
in there.
Some of that, Judd, I can't speak for him or Brandon Carlo for that matter. They sign new deals. With that comes expectations. With that comes more responsibility. And in trying to live up to that responsibility, do you try to do too much?
Well, that's
I think both guys care. I don't think both guys are going to say, oh, I got my money, I can relax. I don't think that's the attitude. I think it's more the other way where I've got to justify.
That's a point that I wanted to make, too, is that there's a little extra pressure.
Sure.
Especially for a guy like McAvoy, who people expect is going to grow into a franchise-caliber defenseman, to start to see more of that on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and you try to do too much, and in trying to do too much, it backfires on you a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it'll settle. I do believe that. So, they'll continue to work with them. And, given all that, they're still 3-1, and they haven't allowed a whole lot of, goals against. So, they allow 4 against Colorado. 1 was an empty netter. So it's, like I said, it's coming. It's coming, and it'll get better as they go along.
And I think in the big picture, I think we have to remember that every team is going through similar issues that the Bruins are. It's early in the season. You're still trying to shake free from August hockey and playing preseason games where maybe not everybody played, and it's a quick camp, and you're trying to get your team cohesive again, whether you've brought in new pieces or not.
I'm real curious how they play today. I mean, it's the home opener. You know, you want to play well, but you know, they just, you had a pretty successful road trip and you come back and you know, you wonder how they're going to react. And it's a quick kind of turnaround getting back here and playing again. So in these two games specifically, you know, today and Monday.
And the Devils are a hungry team. I mean, winless here,
right,
in the first four games.
That, yeah.
You know, a lot of people think with some of the changes that they've made,
they
should push
yeah.
for a playoff spot in the East.
All right, let's go to Mark. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, if I can get that up. There you go. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Back to the goaltender interference. This was two games ago against Vegas. Brett Ritchie gets called for goaltender interference. Now, Marc-Andre Fleury was about 4 feet out of the blue paint.
Yeah.
When does it become interference on the goaltender initiating contact in the skating lane? Because that's really starting to get under my skin. When yeah. the goaltenders are just getting away with initiating contact out of the blue paint and the player getting called for the penalty. Your thoughts?
Well, if the goalie is out to cut down the angle, let's put it that way, and he already established position, he's entitled to that ice.
Right.
And it's a tough call for the forward because you're watching the shot. You're not looking at the goaltender. You're expecting him to be in the blue paint or right at the edge of it. You know, so you're trying to get to the front of the net, but you're not looking at the goal. You're looking where the puck is coming from. And we see that called once in a while, and I hate that call. But if the goalie already established position, whether he's in the blue paint or not, then it's probably goalie interference.
Right. And you, typically in that
situation, it's up to you to get out of the way, even yeah. though you're not even looking there.
Yeah, and the officials usually are going to err on the side of
if the, goalie
the benefit
gets run
of
over,
the doubt yeah. for the – yeah, I mean
– You mean if it's egregious?
Yeah. yeah.
No, and you know, for a forward whose job is to get to the front of the net, that's a tough call. But if – now, if the goalie – if you're getting to the front of the net and the goalie's still coming out, that's a different story. You know what I mean? He's not yep. there yet. He
right.
hasn't established
the guy who's there
yet.
First is yeah. – right? It's right. it's his ice.
Right.
So
there was some barking after that call was made.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand that, though. I can understand it both ways, but I think if the goalie is already there, then it is a call on the forward.
All right, TJ is in the car. TJ, you're up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey guys, yeah, I had a question on replay that I haven't really heard discussed, but I think it would help a lot with all these calls, and really this applies to any sport. If there's a call that's supposed to be egregious or obvious to be overturned, then shouldn't the replay official be able to tell that at full speed? Like, I'm in favor of getting rid of the slow-mo and frame by frame. And then for things like offside, like, we want more goals. Who cares if you're offside by literally an inch that, you know, that we've seen some of these calls overturned on, or the skate's an inch over the ice? You know, it's like, that. I feel like that's a good solution. So I'll hang up and listen.
I appreciate the call, TJ. And I tend to agree with that. That, look, there is so much that can't be seen at the speed that they're going and the naked eye that, I feel like if that call or if they don't have replay, if they don't have a challenge system, I don't think anybody's even talking about the Bruins getting that goal on the one that was offside.
No,
it doesn't,
of course not.
Because, like, the people didn't, you know, people in the arena weren't howling about it. Like, it wasn't readily apparent when they went into the zone. It was a close call. There's a million close calls during the course of the night.
Well, all right, so they're walking the line. You know, their whole model, right, that we want to get it right. You know, so if it's offsides, you have the ability to challenge. Now, all the new rules that have been implemented here, face-off staying in the zone, not the defending team can't make a line change for certain things, given the centers the option of where the faceoff is going to be in the offensive zone, you know, on a strong side. So all these things are designed to create more offense. But the offsides is designed to get it right, if that makes any sense. That's kind of the way that they're going. That's the way that they've gone about it. They want to create more offense with certain things, but they also want to get it right. They got the offside right. It's the way, if you want to change the rule, they got to change the whole rule and not allow any more challenges on offsides.
Right.
But, you know, then of course that thing would have stood. But they had too many complaints about there were too many offsides. Now there's a lot less challenges now because of the penalty. There were a lot less challenges last year because I don't even remember what the rule was last year. You had to have a timeout or whatever it was, and you lose your timeout if you're mm-hmm. wrong. Now you get a penalty, so you'll see less challenges. You got to be 100% sure. So that the replay you know, every team employs video personnel, more than one. And they're always looking for the offside.
Yeah,
every time
as that play is going on, before the Bruins scored, they're already telling the coach, if they score here, we got to challenge it. Yeah, absolutely.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston with you up until 11 o'clock. Billy Jaffe will join me coming up after 10:30 this morning. We'll go around the NHL with him. We'll also get his thoughts on the coaches' challenge system and what needs to be done. Because to me, and by the way, for our producer Tom's sake, the tickets have been given away for Monday. If you haven't figured that out yet, you can stop with the calls on that. But I am more than happy to talk to you at 617-779-0985. But the contest line are officially closed. But I'd love to get more of your thoughts on it, because to me, something needs to be done. This is an across all sports problem to me. This is not just about the NHL, but the NHL is clearly at the forefront of it, especially on this show, that this is not what replay is supposed to be, right? This is not how, I don't think any of us want our games officiated, that you've got officials making calls that appear to be the right calls that are now being overturned because, you know, David Pastrnak was offside by about a hair's width, and 50 seconds go by and the Bruins score a goal and we're going to take that off the board. I mean, the offside in that play has 0.00001% effect on the play as a whole. Right? I mean, you can absolutely make the argument that, hey, if the Colorado Avalanche played better defensively on their penalty kill, they clear that puck and it's all, you know, it's done. But they, you know, the Bruins end up with a 50-second possession, they score the goal, and now we're going to wind back time. And then, by the way, then you're going to have to put those 50 seconds back on the clock so the Bruins get their 50 seconds back on the power play, but their power play unit's been out there for almost a full minute. So they're like, the whole thing is just, it's a ridiculous exercise. You know, the goaltender interference, again, these things are designed, all of replay, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, whatever, it's designed to take care of those things that are so obvious that they have to be fixed, right? Not questionable calls that might go this way or might go that way. That's why all of the leagues have essentially the same wording, which is that it's got to be irrefutable evidence. You know, the NHL uses the word egregious when it talks about goaltender interference. It's got to be irrefutable evidence. Well, irrefutable evidence, as the previous caller brought up, if you go back and look at an offside call frame by frame, and you see that this guy is, you know, I mean, just at barely offside, or that skate that is onside, it's just barely off the ice, so that counts as an offside too. Well, I mean, how precise do we really need to be? You know, the idea of this isn't supposed to be, we're looking for reasons to take goals off the board. But that's what it feels like on some nights. That they're just looking for reasons to take a goal off the board. And in a league that doesn't struggle as much as it used to as far as scoring woes, but still, you know, an extra goal here and there might help your product, might help make these games a little bit more exciting to a broader audience. And instead, we get, you know, we get to watch the officials standing around looking at a little, you know, mini monitor trying to figure out whether this guy was onside or not. I mean, to lose two of them in one game sucks. But it's not just about the Bruins. It's a conversation that we've been having for years. Again, not just about the Bruins. There were, you know, significant issues with the system and what could be challenged and couldn't be challenged during the postseason last year. And ultimately, they made some changes in it coming into this year. But I am so willing to go back to the days before replay and say, you know what? Occasionally the officials are going to screw one up and you just have to deal with that. Nothing you can do, right? It just happens. The officials, they're human. They're going to make some errors. Because I've always believed that ultimately a lot of that stuff just evens out over the course of a season. You might lose a game or two because the officials screwed up, but you're probably going to win a game or two. So ultimately things are going to even out. You get into the playoffs, it becomes a bigger deal. But even then, like, we lived our entire lives up to a certain point where, you know what? If the officials got it wrong, they got it wrong. And it sucked, and you just bitched about it for the next 30 years of your life, but that's what happened. Now we have goals being taken off the board that have nothing, like, one thing has nothing to do with the other. You know, a guy puts a toe in the crease. Well, that's not, you know, not a big deal, especially if the shot was going in anyway. But it's, well, we're going to change our call. It's frustrating to watch as a fan. I can't even imagine what it must be like to be a coach or a player in this league. And just, you know, you challenge that call. If you're going to overturn it, everybody in the building ought to be able to look up at the video board, see the replay, and go, oh, that one's getting overturned. Everybody on both sides ought to be able to do that. If it should be that to that level. And if you're not going to do it that way, then don't do it. Because at bare minimum, what we can ask is, can we just keep the game moving, right? Can we keep the spontaneous joy of a goal or the spontaneous, you know, pain of a goal, depending on which side it is? Can we just keep that as opposed to, you know, the NFL? Guy makes a great play, right? Dives into the end zone. And they say, touchdown. Now, everybody stay put. As we have the people up in the, you know, up in the God position upstairs, they're going to take a look at it and tell us if we got it right or not, and tell us if we need to stop the game for even longer so that we can take an even closer look at it. If it's not 100% apparent that they screwed up at the very beginning, we move on. Hank is up in New Hampshire. Hank, good morning. You're up on 98.5 The Sports Hub and The Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Morning, guys. Yeah, you guys are hitting on everything that I wanted to talk about. I'm a former official, and with these teams in every sport that are employing these video specialists now, it's totally ruining every sport. I believe that they should get rid of those guys. Go back to the old way. As an official, okay, you got to remember that we're also competing out there as well. We're trying to use an analogy as a pitcher, we're trying to pitch the perfect game, okay? And all this review and everything is taking it away from us. No official is out there to be impactful on the game. The real official is the one that goes in, does the game, gets out, and no one knows they were even there, okay? All this crap that's going on, you're totally taking every sport and you're trying to shape it into a box when it's actually a circle. Let the human element play their part.
See, and I believe, too, thanks, Hank, I believe, too, that it affects the way the officials call the games, right? Knowing that they have a fallback, right? Knowing that, oh, well, this can be taken care of on replay. And again, this is across sports too, that you'll see, you know, an official who will, they'll let the play go in football, right? There's a question of whether there's a fumble or not. So we'll just let the play go because that's automatically reviewed if it's a turnover or if there's a score. Well, if we just call it a score, nobody has to challenge it. It's just automatically reviewed. You know, the problem with some of that is, well, if you let the play go, well, what happens if a guy gets hurt on a play that should have been blown dead? I mean, there are potential consequences to that. You know, again, same thing in hockey. If I'm a linesman and I know that, you know, if there's a borderline offside, like I think he might have been offside, but I can just let the play go because coach can challenge that. We can go back and fix it if it winds up being anything. I have to believe it has an impact in the back of the officials' minds, knowing that, well, I can always default back to the video review. They can fix anything that I get wrong. If you take that away and you put them out there with no net essentially, and say, look, just do the best you can, call the game, don't be worried about being overturned. Don't be worried about being fixed. Just call it as you see it. I think the officiating ultimately gets better because they don't err on the side of, well, somebody else will take care of that.
Shoots and refs flashed off the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.985 The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston here with you on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd and Bob on their way to the Garden for morning skate. So it's you and I. Billy Jaffe will join us via telephone in the final half hour. We'll talk some of the NHL replay stuff with him. I know he's got some strong feelings on what the league needs to do. But we'll also talk about some other things going on around the league as well. Like, lost in all of this is that the Bruins got off to a good start. I mean, as we talked about with Judd and Bob, and we tried to focus on as much the on-the-ice stuff with them as we could over the first hour, but a 3-1 start with the road trip that they had to start, I'd take that any day of the week. You know, as I think Bob said, if you have that 4-game trip and you go 2-2, I think you'd be okay with that. 3-1 and very nearly 4-0, because a couple of things go differently. Maybe one thing goes differently in that Colorado game. They probably win that game too. You know, the too many men penalty at the end of the first period ends up costing you a power play goal. That's a game changer. That's a totally different game. If you take a 2-0 lead into the locker room after the first period and you're well on your way to winning your fourth straight to start the season. So a little bit of a disappointment in the way that one ended. But, I mean, only 50% of the goals that you scored counted. So it's tough to get away from that fact. But I like the way that this team has come out to start the season. I like the way that they're responding to, a short offseason, short training camp. It's like, get out there and start taking care of business right away. We've seen this team not be the strongest starters necessarily. I think the fact that Tuukka has played really well in his two games, the fact that Halak has played well in his two games, that's a great sign for this team. They've got some guys who aren't necessarily at the top of their game yet that will get there. You know what I feel most for in the replay issues that we're talking about? Jake DeBrusk. Jake DeBrusk had 2 points wiped off the score sheet the other night. He had a goal and an assist. Still has no points in his first 4 games. He seemed a little frustrated after the game the other night.
Well, I scored and had an assist tonight, but they got pulled back. So, we should have won this game 4-2, but honestly, those weren't goals, I guess. One was offside and goalie interference. So they looked at it and they called it how it was. And, I don't think it's going to snowball, but definitely pissing me off for sure.
Definitely pissing me off. Yeah. Goals are tough to come by in the NHL. Don't want to lose one because Pasta was offsides, you know, 20 minutes ago. Dan in Hopkinton is up next. Good morning, Dan. You're on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. You know, they are off to a great start, and it's good to see them with got their legs right out of the gate, especially after a short off season. But this replay, you know, booth review ruling, it's egregious, really. I mean, at the very least, once the opposing team has a chance at possession of the puck, if they don't challenge right then and there, they shouldn't be able to wait 45 seconds until a goal is scored to review this. I mean, it's comical. I mean, if they knew when the offside happened that the player was offside, the minute that team gains control of the puck, the coach should have to challenge it right then and there. I mean, it's going to ruin the sport. You know, hey, I'll hang up and take your thoughts off the air.
Thanks. Again, I just don't think it's necessary. Right? Occasionally, they're going to mess one up. Guess what? You're going to be the beneficiary of that every once in a while, too. I started right before Judd and Bob left. We started kind of mentioning it. I actually have a guy that I used to work with. I, for those who don't know, worked in the American Hockey League for 9 years. And toward the end of my tenure there, we had a video coach. We had a guy whose job it was as video coordinator to, you know, cut up stuff for the coaches and things like that. He's now gone on and he works in the NHL as a video coach. And I think it was last year when there were similar type controversies, I got in touch with him and I said, can you just tell me what is your, like, what's your protocol? Do you guys drill this stuff? Do you guys, you know, how much do you discuss beforehand what you would challenge, what you wouldn't challenge, things like that? And he said, we don't necessarily do drills. He said, but we have meetings all the time where we look at every play that's challenged around the league. And we go through it, and we go through the official explanation from the league, and we so that we know as best we can how they're going to call this when they go to Toronto, right? So they can look at something and have some measure of reasonable certainty that if we challenge this, we're going to win. Or, you know what, that's the kind of play they're not overturning, so let's not bother. And he said that's something that they do on a regular basis. And it's almost kind of the like a Belichickian Ernie Adams type of approach, right? Where it's you have to know exactly what it is that you're getting into. You have to know the outcome before you even ask the question. And as I said, I look at these things and I don't see a pattern. Right, I see that on some nights this counts as goalie interference and some nights this doesn't. And that's the frustrating thing. And I can't imagine it's not frustrating for the coaches and the video guys too, because it may depend on who's at the other end of the line in Toronto on a particular night, because it's different people in there. It's not the same, you know, you're not talking to the same person 7 days a week. So did they look at it differently? Did they have a different interpretation of the rule than other people do? I mean, it's, again, all of this to try to determine something that could and should be determined in real time on the ice. And having to break it down frame by frame by frame. And, well, did Krejci's skate touch Grubauer's skate? And if so, how much did that really hinder him, and did he have a chance to get reset? Did he have a chance to make the save? I think there's a case that could be made that whether Krejci's there or not, Grubauer doesn't make that save. That puck just was going to be out of his reach, even with his leg fully extended. He wasn't going to be able to get it. And if you have to start asking those questions, to me, that's an easy, well, just uphold it. We don't have enough evidence to overturn it. That's the fallback position. It's the easiest thing in the world. We don't have enough evidence to overturn it. Sorry, coach. It's a judgment call. Judgment calls should be made by the people who are on the ice to make the call. Graham is in Haverhill. Graham, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, what's going on? Big fan of the show. Along the lines of your previous point, can you argue that this is now somewhat of a skill? Because you could say that Colorado won the game here by throwing these challenges out there, when otherwise they were going to lose 4-2 more likely than not. So, I think it's now, as long as the rules the way they are, why not look for these guys that can really raise the flag of when the coach would throw the challenge, and it worked out for Colorado, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as the offside stuff, which is – the offsides is black and white, right? As much as I hate the fact that they're having to go frame by frame to figure these things out, and, you know, I would just say if it's that close, then just let it stand. But every team has that now. And I think that's kind of what Bob said, is that every team has multiple guys who this is their job now. During the course of a game, every time the puck crosses the blue line into your defensive zone, you've got your video guys going, rolling that back and making sure that it was onside. And if there's a question, you know, they're looking at it really closely, and they're the ones who are telling the coach, right? The coach has got an earpiece in, or one of the assistant coaches has an earpiece in, and he's talking to the video people upstairs. He's talking to his off-ice coaches upstairs, and they just radio down and say, this is worth challenging. They're offside. And I said, I would bet that before Colorado challenges that, they already know they've won that challenge. Right? They already know, because so much time had gone by since that puck had gone into the zone. So much time had gone by that they got word, I would guess, within 20 or 30 seconds. Hey, if Boston scores here, they'll overturn this. Because it didn't take very... I mean, we see it happen all the time. And the NHL's tried to get better at this, but we see it happen all the time. Goal gets scored, and the team that got scored against, they kind of drag their feet, getting their guys over the boards, getting their guys set for the faceoff, because they're giving their video guys enough time to go back and take a look at it so they can know whether or not to challenge it. Well, in this particular case, it didn't take any time at all. It was goal got scored, Colorado's challenge, and the officials went right over and took a look at it. So they already knew. And that is, it has become a part of the game that teams now pay people to do this. This is what, and it's like, to me, that's ridiculous. I don't want games being decided by some guy sitting in front of a video monitor who makes the call whether to challenge it or not. Some guy that you've never heard of, some guy that whose picture you've never even seen. Yeah, he helped win that game for Colorado the other night. So congratulations to whoever that guy is. He definitely deserves a raise. But that's our sport. We might as well be doing esports now. Oh, just some guy sitting in front of a monitor is going to win or lose. That's what it is. Becomes a video game.
It's a black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here with you on a Saturday morning, our final half hour of the week. And at this time each week, we welcome in Nesson's Billy Jaffe, who joins us this week on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline in preparation for tonight's home opener. Morning, Billy.
Good morning. I'm coming to you live from Loge, Section 16, Row 7, watching line rushes. Your Boston Bruins this morning.
Can you give us a report? How comfortable are the seats?
I'm in a phenomenal. I've got. Are you kidding me? I've got an unbelievable row right now. I've got, and I'm not being a smartass. Where I'm sitting, I've got tons of room.
Nothing. No leg room issues. No seats wide enough for you. Everything's good, right?
Where I am sitting, right? Well, you know, width is a personal issue. I'm assuming. But I've been working out hard, so let me see. No, I'm I'm fitting all right in here right now. I'm telling you, I got my knees. I'm shrinking. I used to be 6'1". I was like Fletch. I was 6'4" with the head of hair when I used to have a full head of hair. Now I'm down to about 6.5", and I've got the weight back down to not playing weight, just above it. But I feel good. I'm in row 7, low 16. That's where I am, and I feel good right now.
Well, there you go. If you're Billy Jaffe size, things will be good for you. And the rest of you, it's going to get better. They have promised that it will get better. All right, Billy. So, hot topic of conversation this morning, not surprisingly, has been about challenges and instant replay in the NHL. I saw you on the broadcast the other night talking about it. I think we kind of are in sync with this one in that it's gotten to be too much. That this is not what instant replay and challenges are designed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But the genie's out of the bottle. Not going to get it back in. I'm not convinced. This is all my own personal opinion, okay? I am not telling you I've talked to league executives about this currently, or recently. But I'm not convinced that they actually even like it where it's at right now. You know, they might say that they do. I'm not convinced that, you know, especially if there's some real, you know, old-time hockey guys, you know, and whether they're executives or managers, you know what I mean, like with the league or whatever. This cannot be what they want, even if they maybe say it that you know, well, it's just the way it is. Now, you know what? This is such a perfect game in my eyes. I'm biased, obviously, because of the imperfections that happen. And man, oh man, you've got to make split decisions like other sports in milliseconds. And sometimes that means that you miss an offside and you think it's offside, but you don't raise your arm or you don't stop playing because it could be offside. Get your ass back and you play. And that's what we've always been taught. And you've been taught that, you know, at least I was taught, referees are going to make mistakes. Don't get me going on a lot of youth hockey and youth sports and how parents and how coaches treat officials. That's a whole other subject for another day because that's crappy too. But I'm talking about here. So the refs are wrong. But how come it's okay once in a while for players to make a mistake, but, oh, they work through it. But if a ref makes a mistake, oh, geez, those guys suck. I don't get it. Of course they're going to make mistakes. Of course they're going to make mistakes when now you go from NHL broadcast used to be 4 or 5 cameras at most. Now you're talking 12. You get into big games, you're talking 15, maybe 20 for the cup or whatever. And of course you don't want mistakes. And the referees and linesmen don't want mistakes. But it's going to happen. And you know what? Listen, the term that was always used in one of your callers about 15 minutes ago said, it's getting egregious. No, it's not getting egregious. And I'm having fun with the call. It's getting ridiculous. It's supposed to be the egregious foul or the egregious mistake was why we were supposed to have replay. That's it. It all started back on the offside replay years ago. It was a game between Nashville and Colorado. I believe it was involving Matthew Shane. I believe the linesman, who was a phenomenal linesman that made the mistake on missing an offside call with Derek Amell, who's, you know, one of the best. And he missed it by a few feet. That's egregious. It happened because of the way the play went and where the puck went in. So that's when everybody was up in arms over offside replay. So we've gone from a few feet to a half of an inch. Okay, shoot me if I'm if I'm in the minority here. Maybe actually don't shoot me, hate me. I don't, you know what I'm saying. But deal with the half inch. Keep playing. And make it a goal.
I think we had a caller earlier this morning that made a good point. It's a point that I've heard before, but I think is legitimate, is that if you have to slow down and go frame by frame, you shouldn't overturn it, right? That essentially, unless it's visible at full speed to the naked eye, you know, and if you wanted to take a video, it's, you know, well, the official's blocked out from this, you know, from this vantage point, so we have to look at it from another angle, that's fine. But if you can't see it in full speed, then it's not bad enough to overturn. And that's how I felt about that offside the other night, is that, you know, if you don't go back and really dissect that video, nobody in the arena was complaining that was offside until after the goal was scored.
Right. And how come we can now have common sense laws or rules in hockey? For instance, this year they implemented what I would call common sense amendments to what we have for replay. For instance, batting the puck with a stick or a hand, to a player in the offensive zone
yet the official didn't see it, it leads to a goal. That's an egregious miss, and it's a common sense. But the problem is, RJ, is that your version of common sense might be different than my version of common sense. So once you started replay, I don't even remember how many years ago it was now, the problem is now you've gone from an imperfect science and a perfectly imperfect game to wanting it now to be perfect. And holy smokes. I mean, now it's down to the minutiae, I mean, of a hair, you know? I mean, that's it, basically. Of a skate blade being, is it touching the line or is it in the air by a half an inch, like, type of thing. Now we've gone to that. And how, because the team that gets it scored on might say, oh, that was offside. That was offside. Well, let's have the guts to say, like we used to in the old days. And I'm sorry that I'm talking like an old, you know, geezer, but I'm 50 now, so I'm allowed to do it, right?
You've officially reached that point.
Right, I've reached it. But you know what? So you get a goal that was scored on by an offside, by an inch, literally. Get out there. The linesman will say, you know what? I missed that one. These guys are good dudes. They are. I know a lot of them. But you say, you know what? As a player, hey, you know what? We still should have allowed him to score. It's what we used to do in the old days.
Yep.
Anyways, it can't. The problem is, you know what would be awesome if the league said, if the league found a way to say, we're going to have common sense replay. And actually, if they got 31 teams to agree what common sense is, holy smokes. Send them out to make peace somewhere else around the world. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that would be the other thing too. But I could talk about this and rant about it forever. I'm sure many people don't want to listen to me, you know, gripe about it. Maybe they do. I don't know. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of it because as far as I know, you know, every broadcast I make mistakes. Some are that I realize and some that I don't. You power through them. It does, you know, and I understand the game is the most important thing. I get it. But it's all mistakes are going to happen. How do you deal with it? Work your ass off and get through it.
Well, let's talk about some other things going on around the league this week, including the Tampa Bay Lightning, who the Bruins will see for the first time this year coming up on Thursday at the Garden. But they've got a top line that has got to rival anything maybe that's ever been on the ice. In Stamkos mm-hmm. and Kucherov and now Braden Point. Just absolutely decimated Toronto the other night. I mean, that's a hell of a combination that John Cooper's put together down there.
And we saw it last year, right? So yeah. This isn't anything new. Point, though, missed some games due to the fact that he's coming off with hip surgery. And he's back, and, you know, he had to have the contract signed, and he did. And comes back, and in his first game, Point had a couple of points, appropriate with a name like that. He had two goals and an assist, played over 19 minutes. Stamkos and Kucherov were flying in that game. Now, Toronto was playing a version of team defense that I recognize from some of my men's league games over the past. How about spending a little bit of that 40-something mil on four guys on more defense? Now, granted, they got Barry, and I like him, and I like Morgan Riley. But, you know, this is squarely on their coaching staff. They need to figure this out in Toronto. Not that I'm overtly concerned about it, but you know what I mean? If they really want to go far, because you're going to expose Freddie Anderson. If you're going to play him 65 games, which is the feeling, because you got Michael Hutchinson right now as the backup. But if you're going to expose him to 65 games in that kind of defense, he's going to end up acting like Danny Lemieux from Slapshot, yelling at everybody, talking to himself. It's porous. But back to Tampa, listen. Kucherov is going to get 100 points again this year. You know, they're get another year of maturity from a guy like Point. They've added Shattenkirk, who right now has done a nice job of. So there's no pressure on Kevin Shattenkirk. You know, he gets bought out by Rangers. He goes there, RJ, and now he's just part of a crew. He's got McDonough and Hedman ahead of him. Sergachev even could be ahead of him. But here you go, Kevin Shattenkirk on the power play. It's a good spot for him early on. This skilled team. They're playing nicely. I don't look at them right now, though, Tampa. I mean, of course I respect the heck out of them. I don't look at them and say, oh, my God, it's a wagon just yet. I still think they need to add an element of third-line grind, third-line, you know, toughness to this team to be a really complete team.
The Carolina Hurricanes off to a 5-0 start. They've got a win over Washington, win over Tampa already, Florida, who's supposed to be an improved team this year. So, What's up with the Hurricanes early on this season? Are they going to be a contender in that division?
Sure seems like it. We talk about how the Bruins have utilized last season's wonderful regular season, obviously outstanding playoff run, almost perfect, but outstanding, to almost propel them to a nice start and a confident start because they're a good team. You know, the Carolina Hurricanes seem to be there. You know, I think that it's an under-the-radar add of Erik Haula to this team. He's got 4 goals already. He was picked up over the summer from the Minnesota Wild. He's healthy right now. They made another nice addition, I think, of Jake Gardner, where remember how much crap he took in Toronto just from the media and everything there. And, you know, look, he's a really good, I think, second, if not third pair D-man. And now he goes to almost the anonymity, the calmness, the serenity of Carolina compared to Toronto. It's amazing. And so, you know, that's another nice add there. But they're getting production. They got a Svechnikov already. He's got a goal and 8 points, a goal and 7 assists. The youngster who last year, remember, he fought Ovechkin, bad idea, and he got hurt and everything. And now he's, you know, he's another year. He knows what to expect. He's got 8 points in 5 games. What a start. What a start by him. So already a really good D crew, excellent D crew, even though the Bruins, I thought, did a nice job against them. In the playoffs, making them look young still. This is a good team that I think is using the benefit of the maturity that they learned last year. I do. I think that they learned a lot of good lessons last year.
Very early in the season, so in case people have not actually pulled up the standings to look at what's going on in the Atlantic Division, the Buffalo Sabres are 4-0-1, Billy. What's going on there?
They've got Ralph Krueger behind the bench. And they seem to have another nice offensive start to the year, which they had last year. Dahlin, he's leading them with 7 points. This is a guy that, you know, they're not trying to play him 30 minutes a game yet. They're still at the 18 to 20 minute mark. The word is out of Buffalo is that Marcus Johansson, Mojo, the guy that the Bruins fans got to know pretty well during their last year's playoff run, has had a nice calming influence on the team. He's a wonderful guy. Really is. He was just a wonderful guy to deal with. What a way that he comported himself around the room and everything. So he's brought it up. Eichel has scored a lot to begin with, too. He's got 7 points as well. But what I'm seeing out of them right now is their fourth line, guys like Kyle Aposo, you know, guys like Johan Larsson. Larsson just scored last night. But they're getting that kind of depth edge that they need. And they're producing right now, it's early, but similarly to what we see out of the Bruins' fourth line, in the sense of they're providing energy in an area where the Sabres didn't always have it. Now, it's a better D, no doubt about it, with Buffalo. I'm still not convinced, though, that when it's all said and done, that this is a playoff-style team defense yet. But Ralph Krueger has a way, RJ, of getting through to the players and getting an awful lot out of them. And so that's something to recognize and to respect. And they're, you know, so far so good. But they had a great start to the year last year. Don't forget that. And then the bit of a demise the second half of the year.
We'll see Anaheim here on Monday when they come in to take on the Bruins. A 4-1 start for the Ducks. Is Dallas Eakins, is he leading a turnaround there?
He's helping. There's no doubt about it. I think that this team is going to have a challenging year, but that doesn't mean a bad year. They're not ultra fast yet. They're trying to play faster. Dallas Eakins has brought them into the new era of hockey, of, you know, defense involved, 4 guys trying to get into the play. They have guys like Cam Fowler, who I think are going to really relish that opportunity, RJ. You know, Hampus Lindholm is a nice defenseman too, Josh Manson. So they have a nice core there. The biggest thing that they have is on their blue line with their goaltender, with Josh Gibson, John. he is a wonderful net minder who is willing to compete and battle, and he's going to keep him in a lot of games. Ryan Miller won the game last night for him in Columbus. But, you know, they're a team in transition. They are. They had to now. They know that. They still have Getzlaff, but, you know, it's now becoming the team of Silverberg and Raquel, and are those guys enough to lead them to a playoff push or not? My instinct says no. I think Dallas Eakins, who had one earlier head coaching gig with the Edmonton Oilers and that did not go over well, I think he's learned an awful lot. I don't think it's that much different than what Bruce Cassidy experienced between his Washington head coach experience, and now here with the Boston Bruins, where there was a real, you know, real maturation process, and a realization of what he needs to do more. And you know, Dallas is you know, so far so good for that team in Anaheim.
All right, let's finish up with the Devils, who are in town tonight. A 7 o'clock faceoff, of course, here on the Sports Hub and over on Nesson with Billy and company. Devils are winless in their first four games after making some changes over the offseason. What do you expect out of them tonight?
Well, I expect a real hungry team. Oh, my gosh. If they're not hungry for their first win, I don't know when they're going to be. This is a team that is fast. This is a team that has a lot of new faces, from P.K. Subban to Jack Hughes. And, you know, they have expectations on them, much higher level expectations. You know, their issue is goaltending, I think. You know, is it going to be the youngster Mackenzie Blackwood that's going to step up? It hasn't been great so far for him. Is Corey Schneider going to regain his form from a couple of years back? To me, this is a team that is still, you know, look, expectations are one thing. But handling that and then being able to have an identity is another thing. And I think right now that's what they're trying to figure out. What are they when it's all said and done? Hopefully tonight the Bruins are ready for them. It's going to be a challenge for the Bees getting home late from Colorado. Yes, you have the off day, but now you got to figure it out and get ready for this one. Home openers can almost be a distraction at times. Let's see. But the Devils, like, if they're not hungry as all heck, RJ, I'd be shocked.
You guys out on the street tonight?
A few. We're going to have inside and outside. We're going to have both.
Excellent. So go down and bug Billy Jaffe and the Nesson crew on your way into the Garden tonight. Appreciate the time as always. We'll look forward to it for the full hour tonight.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Billy Jaffe. Nesson pregame show starts at 6 o'clock tonight with the face-off at 7 o'clock. Of course, Judd and Bob have the call of it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub as well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.